This is the Digital Update for September 18th, 2016. I'm Filippo Rialfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
We had a pretty big week this week. TGS was this week, but that didn't stop a bunch of other stuff from happening, along with some pretty big releases, like, you know, Bioshock, the Collection, which is a thing I enjoy quite a bit. So, yeah, Pat, you missed last week's show.
Yeah, not for an actual absence. I was right here in front of my computer. The only problem was that I was not conscious at the time. And so, normally what I'll do is I'll get home and have a bite to eat, sit down, go over some stories, you know, maybe some last-minute editions of the podcast. And it's entirely normal, disturbingly normal, for me to actually fall asleep at the computer. But my phone, I've actually got an alarm set for about 15 minutes before the show, so in case that happens, you know, it'll be there to wake me up. The problem is the RANBAT that I went to, I'd set the alarm for that. Ooh. And that recorded over the alarm that I have for the Day Zero update. Ergo,
it didn't go off.
There was no alarm to go off, and the next thing I know, I'm sitting here in my computer chair, just kind of barely able to move, staring up at the clock on my computer, and it says 1:30, which is in my time zone an hour and a half after we begin recording, and I just felt terrible. I mean, 2 years of doing this show almost, and this is the first episode I've missed, so I feel bad.
Well, it happens. I mean,
don't feel bad. I've missed a bunch of shows.
Yeah.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. I mean, we all missed them for various reasons. You know, mine was my stomach exploding. So
yeah,
that was bad.
That was unpleasant.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm here this week, and we got a lot to talk about. TGS was outstanding. They seem to be slowly nudging it toward a little bit of Western news, or at least Western news pertaining to the Japanese games on display, which is exactly what I want in TGS, to be completely honest. But
yeah,
we've got some other stuff to talk about first, like what we're playing and what have you. So
So I guess we could get into that, and I'll start us off because I'm playing Bioshock.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I'm playing Bioshock a lot. Remember how back in 2008 we were playing Bioshock and we were like, hey, this Bioshock is really Bioshock?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, this is just like that, except it's prettier.
Mm. Yeah, so real quick, Phil, because I know the public wants to know.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to like enthusiast sites, everybody's shitting on the game because I don't think it's I don't know if it's like 60 frames a second or whatever, but you know, there's a bunch of nerds out there that care about that. But somebody said the water effects are worse. Is that true?
I don't really see it. No, they're different, yes, but I wouldn't say they're worse.
Does it affect the atmosphere of the game? Because that's the best thing about those games is the atmosphere.
No, it doesn't affect the atmosphere at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, okay.
Yeah.
They're full of shit.
Yeah.
I mean, this game's, you know, moved from Unreal Engine 3 to Unreal Engine 4. So obviously things are going to look a bit different. But yeah, it plays the same. It looks more detailed. It's a good collection to get. I mean, if you've already got the PC versions, you're probably going to get those for free anyway. So there's no reason not to try it out.
Yeah, it's on my list. I'm just not sure when I'm going to play it. So have you done all three, or have you just been doing Bioshock 1?
I'm just doing Bioshock 1 right now. Going through that, and I'll go through 2, and then I'll go through Infinite.
Yeah,
just go all the way through. So, yeah, it's a good collection for, you know, the price you pay on the PS4. I'm glad they added the extra content in there.
Hmm.
Yeah, Bioshock 2 does not come with multiplayer. Let's just get that out of the way right now.
All that lore.
And the lack of multiplayer is not missed by anybody, apparently.
Nope.
So
yeah. So, now, does it include all the DLC for the games?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, this is like the comprehensive BioShock experience.
Yeah. This is all of the BioShock you could want. Yeah. So it's like the season pass for Infinite, the single player DLCs for BioShock 2 and BioShock 1, and a bunch of museum content.
See, this I
that's how those packages should be done.
I don't have time to play it right now, but like I would love to go buy this. I need to wait. I'm broke anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it'll be $20 on Black Friday, but I'm so buying that. BioShock, I know everybody heaped a lot of praise on the first one, and I feel like there's almost sort of been a backlash about it since people know the twist and all that, but BioShock to me is like so many people spend so much time talking about video games, you know, and how they can be more like movies or how video games can be more like books and all this other stuff. And BioShock is a game that, particularly with the twist, works purely because of the format that it is in. If I had to recommend a new person play, you know, a video game that, you know, liked shooters already and was wanting to get their feet wet with something different, BioShock would always be one of those that's at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Because it does something that you couldn't get that twist in a book, you couldn't get it in a movie, because it requires you to go along with everything. So So that's fantastic. I'm glad it's gotten that re-release. It's a shame what happened to the company, though.
Yeah. Well, they're off doing their own thing now, so at least there's that.
I also found out Ken Levine does the fucking vending machine guy, the Circus of Value dude.
Yeah.
I had no idea. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. And aside from BioShock, I've also been playing a little indie action RPG called Zenith. This is kind of a weird game in that it lampoons pretty much all the RPG conventions. And it's also got a really foul mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think in the first 20 or 30 minutes, I think there have been like 15 F-bombs. So that's a thing. Yeah, so far, I mean, in the first, you know, hour that I've been playing, I've, fought some singing spiders. Beat the crap out of some elves. We captured an elf and launched him in a barrel. Unfortunately, he landed in the middle of our own camp and nearly crushed our generals, so she's not really too happy with us right now. Yeah, this is a weird game. I look forward to playing a lot more of it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like whoever these guys are in terms of, you know, I think this is their first game. So, you know, I look forward to seeing what they do in the future, because, this is a good first effort. It's got some technical issues. Hopefully they'll sort those out, because it does get a little stuttery and, yeah. But it doesn't really detract from the game too much. So, you know, I'll have a review of that once I get further into it and hopefully beat it. So, that'll be cool.
Cool.
Yeah, how about you, Pat?
Well, I missed the Let's Weekend podcast this week because I was at another fighting game event. Didn't quite go off the way we planned. We didn't quite get enough people to run the tournament proper, but it kind of worked out in our favor. So we played a bunch of King of Fighters 14 for one thing. And I'm still making people salty with the team that I'm running with at the moment of Daimon, Clark, and Geese. And we also played a couple of other games that really one of the guys brought their PS3. Oh. And so we were doing all sorts of random stuff, and we ended up playing some Third Strike, some Super Turbo. Really reminded me why I used to love fighting games as much as I did, and hopefully I can get back to that, because that was a good feeling, just sitting down and playing some Third Strike with a few other people, and that was nice. Also, NHL 17, of course, came out last week, and I've been playing that toward the review. Been doing my usual Be a Pro thing and whatnot, looking at some of the other modes. So far, it really feels like they did the one thing they needed to do the most with this year's game, which is fix the skating.
Yeah.
And so it plays like a dream. I cannot praise the handling of this enough. and I just really look forward to diving a little deeper into it. In Be a Pro, I did my brief junior run with Gelstorm of the OHL, and then got drafted to the Toronto Maple Leafs, so that'll be a little bit rough, but it should be fun. It's kind of an RPG unto its own, and for RPG situations pertaining to hockey, being part of a very decisive youth movement on a Toronto Maple Leafs team is definitely interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be having fun with that. I might be streaming some more of it here in a while, but we'll see.
Okay.
How about you, Brandon?
Well, first and foremost, I am playing Tales of Exilia 2. I finished the first Exilia. As I said before, that game screwed with my head not once, but twice. And this one already got started pretty early. The combat system is definitely more enhanced than the first one was, because I explained this on the Let's Weekend, which, by the way, those of you who haven't listened to our last episode of Let's Weekend, please do, because it's a screamer.
That's what I heard.
But, yeah, so, like, the combat system in this one is at the base similar to the first Exilia, with the exception that now they have added some additional weapon types to each character. So, like, in the original Exilia, everyone had that one weapon that, you know, they were accustomed to. So, like, you know, you had the one guy was the fighter, and he used his fist. One other guy used a sword, et cetera, et cetera. And in this one, they created what they call the two additional weapons, which is the strong weapon and the projectile weapon. So, like, the guy who is the protagonist in this one, his default weapon are dual swords, but his strong weapons are a sledgehammer, and his projectiles are twin pistols. And on top of...
I'm sensing some thematic conflict here.
And on top of the fact that, you know, all the enemies in this game, you know, have weaknesses and strengths depending on certain types of elemental attacks, they are also, in this game, they are also strong or weak against particular weapon types. So, you know, some of them are weak to default, some of them are weak to projectile, et cetera, et cetera. Also, there's the debt system, which I pointed out in the Let's Weekend. But basically, the protagonist at the beginning of the game manages to accrue a humongous debt, and in order to pay it off, he has to get a loan from the bank. But the stipulation with the contract he signs is that depending on how much of his debt he has paid off, he has his travel restricted. So, you know, and on top of that, depending on
how... Are you going to have some characters or some players just grind that out early on?
You could, but the thing is that Tales games are sort of grind-averse because they tend to lower the amount of experience you can get from stuff you can get from enemies, depending on how many times you fight them over and over again.
Yeah.
Also, the thing is that the way your debt payment works is that if you get enough, you know, currency at a point, you'll actually have a required payment. So, like, say you got a required payment of 7,000 gold, which that's what this currency is called in this game, gold. And, you know, you're out there. If you are out there, you know, grinding away and you get 7,000 gold, you automatically have to pay all of it. So you really have to make sure you're managing your money right in this game.
Yeah.
Other than that, I am also playing a nice English-patched ROM of Live Alive. Live Alive is a cult JRPG from Square for SNES back in the day. It never made its way over here, but it's one of those games that a lot of people have desperately wanted.
Yes.
Basically, it's a JRPG where you play, I think it's like 5 or 6 different storylines, each of them taking place in their own unique universe. So, like, there's one universe that's, you know, and it's like, it's specifically, it's like throughout time. So, like, there's the parts that, like, it takes place in the far, far future. There are some that takes place in, like, right around the birth of creation, ancient China, feudal Japan, Wild West, etc. And basically,
Enix back.
Yeah, and the fighting system is basically a grid-based turn-based combat. Yeah. So that's what I've been playing. What about you, Chris?
So I'm still making my way through Picross 3D Round 2 because they just keep throwing puzzles at me. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep going and doing some more of these. Oh, you've unlocked another book. Okay, thank you. Let's just keep this going. Keep on working on that stuff. Also been playing Pac-Man Championship Edition 2, which also came out this past week. And it's a bit different. So, obviously, if you've played Pac-Man Championship Edition, one of the cool things was the way the board changed as you got the fruits sort of changed, like one half of the board, and you'd have more stuff to go after.
Yeah.
And but here, sort of once you get the dots collected on the current board or fill up a meter, the fruit appears, you grab that, and it sort of pops you out of that board, and you fly to another board. Yeah. It's like a weird new like style thing, but they make that sort of a big focus. Instead of the board actually changing, you just you and the ghosts fly to another board, which is a bit weird. And in the sort of main championship course style, one of the big things they have is they still continue the ghost trains as you're going along. There's sleeping ghosts, and if you're running the paths right, you essentially fill up all 4 ghosts, depending on the game type. They have one that's just like one type of ghost, or the extreme one that's just incredibly hard. But yeah, you fill them up, and after like 3 or 4 boards, you eventually get the power pellet is the thing that will spawn if you get enough of the dots. And once you do that, they all start going nuts. Then you see these lines appearing, and they start flying around the board on these specific path. So you take out one ghost, take out all of his train, and those train ghosts fly to the other ghosts. So you get this like weird pattern where they keep flying to the other ones, and then you get to the final one, and then it just starts flying off the board, and Pac-Man is like this anime dude just eating his line of ghosts out into space. It's kind of crazy. And the whole boss thing is an interesting other change. This boss stage is basically doing that same progression where you're just trying to get through these boards as fast as possible. And every chunk you do does like one hit on the boss. And then once you do like 3 of them, you then just see Pac-Man split up into many, many Pac-Mans. They just start eating the ghost. The big giant ghost that's hanging in the back. It like splits up into little ghosts and just start eating them all. It's just weird as hell. And pretty different. They throw a bunch of tutorials at you at the beginning of the game, like 11 different stages of tutorial stuff. Oof. It's pretty intense. It's different. It's still pretty cool. It's just different. It's not as like smooth and simple as the original game was, or even DX They had a couple other things, like there's a bomb jump where instead of like blowing up the ghosts and sending them back to the starting point, you kind of do a bomb jump and you jump back to the Pac-Man starting point. So instead of like resetting things, you kind of just jump back to the home point that you start at. And they also have these other little jump points that you can sort of jump from the either the left or the right side of the board, from the top right corner to the bottom right corner. Same thing on the left side. It's some weird stuff they've done with this game, and it's kind of cool so far. I'm still looking forward to playing more of it. Because they have like these first set of like challenge stages. Then you get to an actual adventure mode that I haven't gotten to yet, because you have to beat a bunch of the challenge stages. Or the score attack stages, I guess they're called. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing more of that. Also kind of started up Pac-Man 256 on PS4 as well, since that is on sale. I also started up Star Trek Online on the consoles, PS4 specifically. And that game has changed a lot since I last played it on PC. There's an actual intro where you start at the Starfleet Academy, and there's actual voice acting from the other people. Your character doesn't actually talk, so it's this weird thing. It's not really mute. You see dialogue and no voice.
Yeah.
I kind of would have liked a generic male or female voice for that, because I imagine it's not too different for different people. Yeah, there's lots of character customization stuff, different races and such you can pick. I chose outfits for the next generation stuff. So I guess the PS Plus starter kit you get was open up that stuff early on. And the typical Star Trek thing happens. You got the new crew on this ship with your mentor, and the ship gets attacked by Klingons. The captain mentor gets taken over to the Klingon ship. Tells you to shoot the ship, and then your person becomes the captain, new captain of the ship. And I went and helped out a couple other ships trying to get out of this area. Happened upon a Borg invasion. It's like, well, we got to go deal with this now. And that's about as much as I've done. Got, I think, one more tutorial storyline to go through, but so far it's pretty good. It definitely looks like an old PC MMO.
Yeah.
The spaceflight is pretty good. It's sort of the same system where you have to actually like increase your speed of your ship and sort of worry about your shields on the four cardinal directions of your ship. That sort of stuff. It's mapped pretty well to controllers. They make it a little bit hard to get to the dance stuff. But they have a lot of different dances you can use. I just kind of wish I could just have some sort of macro to make it a lot easier to pull out. Yeah, so far that's pretty good. Looking forward to playing more of that too. So how about you, Lee? What you been doing?
I've been playing Legion, which I got to say, like, so far, I'm pretty damn impressed by it. Like, there has not been a shortage of content. I'm having a great time actually, like, going through and playing everything. I'm already getting the itch to play some alts, but, like, their new raid opens up on Tuesday. We're going to go in there and play through that. And I've been really impressed by the storytelling. There's a lot to do. Like, this is it's almost like the complete opposite of what happened with Warlords of Draenor. Like, you got to level cap in Warlords of Draenor, and the only thing to do was raid. And, like, whereas with this, they have an entire chunk of the game as far as questing and the world that's out there. that isn't even doesn't even open up to you until level 110. And then when you get some rep up with the factions and all the different zones, you get what are called world quests that's open, that opens up. And they're basically dailies, but there's about 25 of them for each day. And if you do four for each faction, you know, in like a 1 or 2 day period, you get a chest and get some loot, but there's all kinds of different, rewards for the daily. So you can kind of choose how you want to play. And it adds a ton of variety to this game that has been missing for so long. I'm pretty damn happy with it. I'm waiting to see how everything else shapes out because Blizzard obviously took the feedback that they were given about this extremely seriously, because this is a giant 180, really from all of the problems that happened with Warlord. So I'm pretty happy. So I've been doing that. And then, of course, Dragon Quest VII came out, and I've already fired that up. I'm about 3.5 hours into that. They definitely changed the intro. The intro is different. It's a lot shorter, but I don't think – I've seen some people complain that it sort of undermines the world building that they've done. I don't agree with that. I think it still works just fine. I just think the big thing that probably a lot of people aren't aware of is that if you're going to play this, you need to know that you're not going to be hitting anything for probably a good, you know, hour to 2 hours when you start it out. But, you know, the thing is, in the overall flow of the game, that's okay because the game's like 100 hours long. So, but I think as far as I can tell, it's a great port so far. It looks good. It's interesting playing a Dragon Quest in 3D. I'm not sure how I feel about that. So far it's been good. And now I'm just sitting here. I can't wait until 8 comes out, and I can't wait to see what Square is going to do with this. Either they're going to fuck it up, or they might actually, you know, have some sort of I don't want to say a revival, but, you know, maybe they'll have a change of heart about what they want to do with Dragon Quest as it relates to America. And then other than that, I've been playing the We're Out of Gas game, which is a big deal right now all along the East Coast because they broke a pipeline and now everything's gone to shit. So people have lost their minds.
250 gallons of gas a day being poured out.
250,000, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then people have lost their damn minds out here because everybody bum rushed the gas stations. We were actually lucky. I actually ended up paying less than I normally would for gas today because we ended up going to Kroger. For the guys that don't have Kroger out where y'all are, Kroger's a grocery store. But they have this thing where they
We call it Smith's out here.
Yeah, they have a thing where you have a Kroger card, right? And if you have a Kroger card and you purchase a certain amount of food, I want to say it's like $100, you get like 5 cents off your gasoline, and it stacks. So I was able to get 30 cents off my gasoline, so I paid what I would normally pay, you know, otherwise. But they've already got people losing their minds out here calling the cops on gas stations because people have been putting up signs like gas being like $4.99. And this same kind of thing happened after Katrina. It was really bad here in Atlanta just kind of because of our location. So that's the other thing. So it's going to be funny. I'm lucky I work from home because otherwise I'd have to be out dealing with this stuff. And, you know, the people are losing their damn minds. And that's actually kind of fun to watch while I play Dragon Quest.
Now you know how it feels like to be driving a car in Europe because gas is pretty expensive over there.
Yeah.
Of course, the taxes all go to, you know, those wonderful universal health care systems, which we do not have.
Yeah, I mean, I think too, part of it too is just sticker shock, right? I mean, people are like, holy crap, I can't believe gas is this expensive. And it hasn't risen that much, but that's not really the point. You know, it's just more like, oh, look at this, these clowns screwed up, and then now it's going to cost us money.
Yeah.
So, step on the petrol. Yeah.
All right, so I guess we'll get into our discussion topics for the week, because we got quite a few of them.
Yeah.
Pat, start us off with this one, because this is a pretty good, pretty cool.
Yeah, ROM hacks are no new thing. They've been around almost as long as emulation itself has. Some genius went ahead and made an NHL 94 mod for the Genesis version, updated for the 2016 World Cup of Hockey that's going on right now. So all of the current players are in there. The line combinations are current as of the final exhibition games. And it's just a pretty much ideal way to recapture NHL 94 with a modern twist. So I just thought that was something noteworthy to put out there.
That's why I love gaming, because stuff like this happens. Yeah, I just think that is so cool. Like, yeah. Same thing when people are doing that with like Tecmo Bowl and just anything else. Like, you know, take something that you like playing, especially, you know, for us old fogies now where it's like, I don't want to play the new. If you could just attach current stuff to the old games, I'd be happy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of those things, you know?
See, I'm not ordinarily that way, at least as far as the hockey goes, because I think EA is in such a good place right now. They're inching themselves closer and closer toward that perfect simulation of the sport, and I don't want to discourage that by any stretch. But when you get into things like international competitions, like Olympics, World Cup, World Championships, whatever, and you have a necessarily ratcheted up level of play, I think that retro style, that arcade style of sports gaming really lends itself better to that atmosphere and just that style.
Yeah, I mean, I see the reasoning behind, like, why there are the games that are out there now, especially, you know, if you have these types of yearly installments, you know, you want to give people incentive to come back and to buy your $60 game every year. But, like, for me, I don't know. I don't get too much. This is a personal thing. I don't get too much in the simulation portion of it. I do prefer the arcade-y style stuff, and so that's why hearing about something like this it just is so cool to me, because – I don't think, you know, I think that's the kind of thing I'd get back into. Like, honestly, if they came out with an updated NBA Jam, I'd be in there.
Well, they did a few years back.
No. I mean, like, old school NBA Jam with Bill Clinton in it, you know. And
they did. They had, like, classic characters or, like,
I think Obama was in stuff. It.
Mm-hmm. Holy shit, really?
Yeah, just awesome. Just go look for NBA Jam on Fire Edition.
I'm going to have to check that out, because if they can get an edition like that where I can play Obama and dunk on Mitch McConnell, I'm so there.
I don't have an exhaustive list of bonus characters handy, but
there are a lot of them.
They definitely recaptured NBA Jam. Hmm.
And NBA Jam Boys.
Beastie Boys. Just one thing I felt they did wrong with it. That was when you're unlocking classic players. They rated John Stockton a 4 out of 10 from 3-point land.
Get the fuck out. Really?
Yep. I have no idea where that came from, but...
Somebody's ass, apparently.
Yeah, the NBA Jam unlocks the head for that game. Beastie Boys, the Democrats, which had Obama, Biden, Bill and Hillary.
Oh my god, Biden's in
Republican,
it?
Republican, McCain, Palin, George Bush, Dick Cheney.
Duncan on Jay Cole. Biden. Oh my god, I'd be totally in there. Oh, Uncle Joe giving him the business. Awesome.
Yep. They also did a new NFL Blitz. I'm not entirely sure how that one turned out in comparison to the last.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was bad.
Yeah. Okay, you want to play multiplayer? Okay, here you go.
Do you want to play single player? Sorry.
Oh, it didn't even have the ladder like it normally does?
Nope.
Oh.
Jesus.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Dude, I'd like to see a Rivals, Arch Rivals revival. That's what I want to see. The ability to punch people in the face and steal the ball. We need more of that.
Yeah.
So, wasn't that a claim, though?
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Well.
But, dude, that was such a dirty game. Like, if you played it with your friends at, like, Pizza Hut or whatever.
Everyone was going to be salty.
Yeah, everybody's going to be pissed. Like, you're getting punched in the face, and I'm dunking on you.
Yeah.
Uncle, you get Mark Turmel and Tim Kitzrow in the game, too.
Yep.
Dude.
All right, they even brought back Tim Kitzrow to call the game.
Hmm. Of course. Can't have anybody else.
Yeah, I think he was working at EA for a while. Mark Turmel still works at EA now. Yeah. I think he left since then.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Anyways, moving on, we've got a bit of a, I don't know if it's sad news, but it is kind of timely.
Anytime someone can retire at age 42, you congratulate them.
Yeah. And yeah, we're talking, of course, about veteran Chris Metzen of Blizzard, decided to retire from the company. Yeah, not really sure Why?
Well, I got some ideas. I think, well, so I know you guys don't play WoW, but like Legion is sort of like the end as far as a good chunk of the stories that have been going on really since Warcraft 1. And, you know, I think, you know, he got to the point they launched Overwatch and everything else like that. He's been able to do Diablo. They did StarCraft. They've obviously done all the stuff that they've done in WoW. And so I think he just kind of hit
it. And he did Overwatch. Don't forget he did Overwatch.
I mentioned Overwatch. Yeah, so he's done all of this stuff. And you know, part of me, like, this is going to sound so bad. So other Blizzard people have gone on and they have, like Rob Pardo in particular, started a new company. And some old Blizzard folks went to that company. And if you actually read Metzen's goodbye, which is actually really kind of like, is incredibly heartfelt. I think if anybody, you know, has any love for any Blizzard games, they should totally go read it, because it's actually worth a read. Because Metzen, I would actually, you know, I would argue is one of the few people in the gaming industry who doesn't have any sort of disdain for the hardcore that are into the games that he's worked on. You know, you look at some of these guys that have made games and have personalities, you know, out there in the forefront. You know, some of them can be very antagonistic towards their fans. And what's interesting, if you ever watch any BlizzCon footage or just really anything with Metzen in general, I don't think there's a more enthusiastic person in the games industry when it comes to talking about what they're working on. It's almost childlike in a way, where he's like, isn't this awesome that this is, you know, going to be what we're doing? But, you know, I think he's probably told the story as far as, you know, loose ends and stuff that he wants to. But and this is the part where I'm wondering if I might catch shit for it. But, like, retiring at that early age, when you're that young, almost strikes me as, like, is he sick? Like, and I know that's an awful thing to think, but it's just, I think it's just due to kind of what I've seen in my lifetime. Like,
you do have to wonder,
you know, like, well, because if you also, again, if you look at his in his goodbye, he talks about spending time with his family. Now, I would imagine, you know, I can't imagine that working for Blizzard, you know, you don't hear horror stories coming out of Blizzard. They're not an EA. You know, when it comes to, like, working conditions or anything else like that. But, you know, you also have to wonder, you know, being that directly involved and having your hands in everything the way that he has, that's probably really time-consuming. And, you know, I'm currently, just with my job, I'm working 12, 13, 14 hours a day. You know, that being spending time with my family has become extremely important to me. I would love to retire at the age that I am if it meant, you know, I could go spend as much time as I wanted with my family. But I don't think that would stop me from doing anything. And, you know, if you're a creative person, I think that's the other thing is aren't you going to do something else? And if you look at his goodbye, he says specifically, I'm not going to another company. I'm not doing anything like that. I'm retiring. And that was the kind of thing that made me think, like, shit, I hope he's not sick, you know. But
saying that, certainly, too. I mean, the muse will tee off on him. There's no question.
Yeah, exactly. You can't be – you. This guy has
– a creative person cannot stop being creative.
Yeah, it just, it's not a faucet, you know. So, or, you know, it could be maybe he's not inspired to do this anymore. Maybe he's told the story he wants to tell. I mean, there's a lot of things that it could be. But I hope, you know, I hope whatever he does, he finds some happiness in it. Because I don't think anybody, like, you can, I think you can argue about the quality of Blizzard storytelling, you know, recently. But they have, at least with some of their earlier games, they have told some of the best stories in video games that I have ever seen. As far as, like, their characters are very well defined. Everybody knows, like, you look at something like StarCraft, everybody knows who Kerrigan is. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody knows who, you talk to anybody. I mean, fuck, we have the Zerg are in popular culture. Like, if you're rushing somebody down, it's like, yeah, we're Zerging it. I mean, there's a certain amount of everything that he's done that's sort of inlaid in popular geek culture now. So, but yeah, like I said, I hope he's not sick. It's just so strange if you're that kind of creative person that you're just like, nope, I'm not going to be creative anymore.
Well, the thing you also have to remember is he has been branching out from games lately. So, you know, it could be that maybe he just decided he didn't want to work on games anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe I guess partly just, that he's just been there for almost 23 years, more than half his life.
Yeah.
And he's got a new kid and probably wants to
help. I mean, he was the there kids. Before Warcraft came out.
Yeah. Yeah. He was 20 years old.
If you look at the original Warcraft instruction book, it's got all his art in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
And, so. You know, on top of that, I mean, those of you don't know, on top of, you know, the stuff he's done with Blizzard, I mean, he's been writing comics. You know, he has been writing Transformers series. So, and then, of course, there's the comic that Soldier 76 originated in. So, you know, he's had, I would not be surprised if he's had all these other projects outside of games that he's wanted to do for a long time.
Like, I can finally do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've finished a story I want to tell with Warcraft, and now I can go do something else.
Yeah.
I can totally see that. Yeah. But I will say, I do think I'm not one of those people that kind of goes, like, oh, it's a blow to the industry that this person's not doing it anymore. I will say that as far as – I think especially over the last few years, it's very easy to look at the video games and the culture that surrounds it and feel very negative and feel like, you know, the people that are helping create these things are very antagonistic towards the people they're actually creating the stuff for. And I think Metzen is really a rare exception, because you never heard anything bad come out of that guy's mouth about anything that he worked on. It was always just pure 100% enthusiasm. And, you know, I don't even know. I think maybe, too, for me, looking at it like that is we need more of that in life, not just with video games. Like, go look at anything that he did at BlizzCon, any intros that he does, and you can feel it. Like, I don't know people that get that excited about a lot of things in real life, and he was getting excited about, like, orcs are coming over the, you know. I just think that's really cool. So I hope whatever he does works out. This has been a big part of my life.
Ordinarily, you have to be like a rock concert or something to feel that level of energy.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, rock concerts usually happen at BlizzCon.
Yeah.
It's usually the expert Tauren Chieftains or...
Yeah, you know, the elite Tauren Chieftain, yeah.
The band that's because Sam Wise.
Yeah, a bunch of those guys, even Mike Morhaime, the president, they all get together and fucking jam. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Sam Wise, who's been their primary art guy for the past decade or so as the lead singer.
He looks like he belongs in a fucking metal band. I don't know if you guys have ever seen a picture of that guy.
Yeah. And as for Chris Metzen, I mean, he's probably, other than Samwise, you know, Chris Metzen was basically the face of Blizzard.
Yeah.
You know, and he was so, it's not, because, you know, it's enough to say that, you know, he was, you know, he did, you know, he worked as the story guy, he worked on the concept stuff, but just audio-wise, I mean, he was a voice actor.
His voices are all over everybody. He played the king for Warcraft, he played Thrall.
Yeah, he's Thrall.
Course. Yeah, he's a huge, you know.
He's a bunch of the dudes. He's a bunch of dudes in StarCraft.
Yeah, he's a huge chunk of just the general like orc voices. Mm-hmm. Even Ulduar, he plays this guy named Algalon the Observer. Yeah, his fingerprints and his DNA are kind of like all over so much of that. So yeah,
so every time you take up StarCraft and you hear Battlecruiser Operational, give Chris
that's right. Yeah,
your regards, because him you're hearing.
Yeah, a good chunk of his voice and stuff was really used to kind of add some of the personality that Blizzard games are known for. And I would actually agree with you, Brandon. I think when I think of Blizzard, he's actually the first person that I think of. I don't think of like Mike Morhaime or any of those guys. It's definitely Metzen.
Yeah. So he will definitely be missed, but hopefully, we won't see the last of him in terms of other stuff that he does. So. We'll just definitely wish him all luck. The best. Yeah. And look forward to seeing what else he ends up doing, if he does anything else. So, moving on from that, we got a few months ago, we got the announcement that the CPS2 had been finally cracked completely. And a few months later,
the villagers now rejoiced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now we have the method for doing such cracking has been released. I went over this, took a look at it, and Yeah, this is about as complete a crack as you can possibly want. What this effectively does is, if you have a dead CPS2 board, what you basically end up doing here is replace your battery. Don't worry about the security key, because what you're doing here is re-injecting it onto the chip that used to hold it. So basically, you're restoring the original security key back to the board.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's going to be instrumental in the preservation of CPS2 games, which is very important to anyone who is enthusiastic about arcade games in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and from what I can tell here, this method basically contains the keys for every CPS2 game that we know of. And basically what you do is you build it, you just program it to an Arduino with an LCD keypad shield, so you can select between, you know, whichever board you're looking at, and then just program it, and you're good to go. So, yeah, this is really, really good stuff. I love seeing this kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Because, one, I love the clever engineering that went into this. It's like 2.5-3 years of work to get to this point. Now, you know, with the knowledge that they have here, makes me wonder if they can actually do stuff for, I don't know, the CPS3 to finally completely crack that.
It can't be that different.
Yeah, I
can't imagine. Not on that level.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And very if we're getting to the point of preserving CPS3 games, then it's a small body of work, but it's an important body of work.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, right now already we have CPS3 multicarts.
Yep.
You know, that's kind of the brute force way of doing it. Yeah. But yeah.
It would be nice if something a little less ham-fisted came along.
Yeah. So we'll have to wait.
Start getting into genuine preservation.
Yeah. And if you build one of these devices to reprogram CPS2, you could probably make yourself a nice little side business.
It's true.
Yeah. So, just saying. Oh, okay. So finally, we have to get to Digital Homicide Valve, or, yeah. Okay.
So maybe we should start off for the small group of people who don't know what Digital Homicide, who they are. They're basically shovelware extraordinaire. They put out really shitty games in bulk. And
yeah, they put out very crappy games. They basically shotgun Steam with them. This is a development team of, you know, basically two brothers. So, you know, they actually do believe in what they're doing. Unfortunately, what they're doing is crap.
Yeah, I guess they have 50 games available right now.
Yeah, that's what boggles my mind. 50 games. They have the determination.
Are you putting available in air quotes?
No, this is actually 50 games on, well, that were on the store.
This is advertised on their website, digitalhomicide.ninja.
Yes. Wait, hold on. I think we should have a conversation about the fact that you can get a domain name as .ninja.
Oh, yeah.
You can tons get, of them.
Yes, a lot of cool.
Let's talk about that instead of this. Can we do day0update.net? That would be incredible.
It's probably a lot of money.
I think we could probably
put it out there.
Yeah.
Sorry.
derailed.
Sorry, I just got really excited.
That's where they're putting their money in, is URLs.
Yeah.
It's not into the games.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, boggles my mind. I was saying 50 games. They, you know, spent 1 to 2 months in whatever, however many weeks it takes for each of these games. Wouldn't it just have been better time spent on one game? You might get better quality by doing that. I don't know.
I don't know. When you can do a Wyatt Derp and then Wyatt Derp 2, Peacekeeper. Like, they're they're not going too far on a lot of these. It's like, oh, here's this game, and then we're just going to add another subtitle to this game.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of their stuff is basically really derivative.
Yeah. So, like, you'll see stuff like, you know, Temper Tantrum, which is, you know...
Galactic Hitman, yeah. Devil Share, Deadly Prophets. That might be
they got, decent names.
Yeah.
Galactic Hitman is a great name.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's a game that barely works.
That's not the point, though. Let's talk about these. Let's talk about these names and Dot Ninja.
Forsaken Uprising.
I can get it for $12.
Hmm.
That sounds like a steal.
Yeah. So the story here, this week, though, is that they subpoenaed the court because they want Valve to cough up 100 names of reviewers that were apparently defaming Digital Homicide, according to them. So, yeah. What ended up happening was the court actually granted the subpoena, and then Valve promptly said, screw you, we're canceling your developer account. Goodbye.
Taking down all their games.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, maybe I shouldn't say that, because...
Yeah, their quote is, Valve has stopped doing business with Digital Homicide for being hostile to Steam.
Well, now, hold on. Now that I'm saying this out loud, this is just PC, right?
Yeah.
That is actually... So wait a minute. So they wanted the names of the reviewers that shit on them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's their personal information.
They wanted their personal information. What did they want that for?
So they could sue them.
So they could sue them for expressing their opinions?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, well, fuck them. Never mind.
They claimed they were harassed for getting 42 of their games taken down from Steam Greenlight.
Well, is that true, though? Like, I mean, were they getting harassed?
They've had that many games fail to get through Steam Greenlight.
Position that a game that goes on to Greenlight is entitled to being greenlit, which is obviously not the case.
Okay. Well, because, like, on one hand, the reason I'm asking is because, frankly, video gamers can be really nasty, right? Like, so I can only imagine, like, if it's possible these guys were getting harassed, what they were seeing. I mean, Jason Schreier from Kotaku got death threats because he said No Man's Sky was going to be delayed. So
yeah, but these guys are also known for harassing others for criticizing them.
That's what I was going to say.
They have a current lawsuit going on against Jim Sterling for $10 million for
that is when it goes back to the
out.
Jim Sterling thing,
which really started this mess.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're trying to do the same to others.
Oh, they are.
And yeah, Kotaku has the whole lawsuit here. Lots of juicy tidbits, lots of screenshots, faxed screenshots, I guess not faxed, photocopied screenshots, 62 pages of them in this 123-page legal document. So if you want to read a bunch of comments from Steam and Reddit and other places, it's a hell of a thing.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I'll be honest. It actually, I'm kind of going back with this, but you know what this really reminds me of? It reminds me of, how many of you guys remember a dude named Derek Smart? He was the guy who created this game called Battle Cruiser, I think it was.
Oh, yes, Battle Cruiser 3000.
Yeah, and, you know, he was famous for, he supposedly was developing that thing for like a decade.
Yeah, I remember this.
And he kept, you know, going on message boards and on Usenet and stuff, because he started talking about this thing back in 89, and he, you know, he said, man, this game's going to be so awesome, and then while he was, you know, it was going to be the ultimate space simulation game with just about every aspect of gameplay you could think of, and that, you know, the guys, and that, you know, he would go on various message boards and stuff and shit on whatever space game was coming out, like Wing, you know, he shat on like Wing Commander a lot, and you know, just all that, and then finally Battle Cruiser 3000 came out and it was god awful.
It was a broken mess.
Yeah, it was basically spreadsheet the experience. And he is notorious for basically going online and just trolling the shit out of people.
Yeah.
You know, it's and these guys remind me a lot of that, in that they're these guys who, you know, are have a very exaggerated sense of self-importance about who they are and what they make.
Yeah.
And so the way that people are the fact that, you know, mentally the idea that people are reacting negatively to what they're working on is something they cannot accept.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the things that I remember them saying was we were talking about their game, The Slaughtering Ground, and how it was a buck, and how they were justifying the game being crap.
Because it was a buck?
No, not because it was a buck, but because it had Steam trading cards, which would sell for more than the price of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'll just let that sink in.
Okay.
So, yeah. I kind of wish these guys would get themselves together. Because, you know, one, the game biz really doesn't need stuff like this.
No.
Yeah. But two, deep down, I actually think they want to make a good game. They believe that they're making good games, and if they could just focus all that effort and anger into actually developing the game that they want to make, they could probably come up with something really good.
Too but much ambition, not enough patience.
Yeah.
Because, like, the Slaughtering Grounds, I mean, that game was literally, almost all of it was asset. Almost all of it was entirely made of assets they got from other places.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine for like an alpha, but yeah.
At least modify the assets, or at least if you're going to use assets, make them thematically relevant instead of just placing, you know.
So what is their goal here? I mean, I think that's something that's also worth examining. Like, what is the point of them going through this exercise? Like, on one hand, like, I don't think that they should have access to anybody's, like, personal records. Like, nobody fucking hits up Yelp and goes, give me the address of, you know, Sizzlecrotch69 because they gave my restaurant a 2-star rating. But, like, I don't even think that's fair. I mean, I think that the nature of if you put yourself out there, if you put your product out there, then you should expect to be judged on it. But at the same time, the part that sucks about I guess the status of PC gaming in general and that sort of marketplace is Steam is really the big player. Yeah, you have GOG and all that other stuff, but Steam is, you know, ubiquitous with delivering PC games. So if they're cut off from actually being able to use that marketplace, that's actually kind of a big deal.
Yeah, so they specifically lay out the damages they're seeking from these people. For direct involvement in attack upon 42 games posted to Greenlight in 2016 that failed to make through. Low-end value, $5,000 per title per year for 5 years for a total of $1,050,000. Along with that, for over 21 months of decreased production, both from harassment, interference with business, emotional and mental strife, and for competitive reasons by some defendants, the loss of over 40 titles that will never come to exist at above value of $5,000, yeah, say for that $1 million total. This is a rough estimate as Jane/John Doe interference cannot be accurately determined until subpoena filings are completed, data gathered is analyzed, and the complaint amended. All titles listed above were attacked within the Steam Greenlight system. Our submissions by the plaintiff before Digital Homicide Studios LLC took under contract. And they lay out some more stuff. An estimated 1,500 hours that will be spent on legal work to self-represent this case over the next 3 years, which will be a detriment to the plaintiff's chosen profession. The plaintiff's work creates cash flows rather than hourly payments, and as such has compounded value and therefore loss over time. With an estimated 4 product creation per month, 5 months' work lost dealing with self-representation for this case, estimated loss over time restitution during critical market time is a minimum product lifetime loss estimate of $500,000. This will be proven in trial or at time of summary judgment. So the amount of controversy.
Well, you guys are laughing at this. You guys are laughing at this, but there actually might be something to this. Like as far as lost revenue, because even the fart button games on shit like iOS and everything made money. I would imagine these guys aren't continuously putting this kind of shit out if they're not getting some sort of return on it. And, you know, harassment and everything else aside, it's a big deal to be cut off from that marketplace, which might be the only relevant one for it, for them as far as what they're selling. They might have some traction here, even if you take in like their the harassment and everything else they've done. This is definitely something I'm going to look more into because you can take whatever personal view of the guys that you want, but if their argument essentially comes down to this is the avenue that this company controls the avenue in which we're allowed to put our product out, and then we've been cut off from it. Regardless of their behavior, it's very possible that the courts or a jury would side with them because imagine like what we do, right? Like let's say the only way for us to get a podcast out was through iTunes. Let's say and that's, you know, the biggest one that people use to listen to this kind of stuff. What if iTunes just came out and said, and this was the way we made our money. If Apple came out and said, fuck you, we're not going to put your shit on here because we don't like the way you behave or we don't like this one thing, and that cuts us off from our revenue, that's a possibility for us to go to court. Now, the big problem becomes, do these guys have the time and the money and everything else to fight Valve? They definitely do not. But just the idea being brought up to it, especially Valve is being as quiet as they are on every single front when it comes to Steam. This could be something that has legs simply because it's going to question whether or not, as far as the PC market goes, how you really make your money. You know, they could very well get away with something like this, even if they are assholes.
Yeah, to a degree, I can see that they'll have to obviously somehow prove all of these numbers. So their amounts are asking $2,967,000 and $967,500 in compensatory damages, emotional, reputational, and financial distress $5 million. Punitive damage request $10 million for a total of about $18 million.
Yeah. Well, good luck with the punitive because that's nearly impossible to get anyway.
Yeah, they're alleging the 11 named defendants, as far as usernames, about $269,772.73 for each of those. The emotional distress.
Yeah, they're not going to get that shit. They
gets about $450,000 for each of those people. Then the punitive damage is $909,000 from each of those people.
Yeah.
That's what they're seeking. And the big thing is obviously whether Valve is going to give it up, give up their private information so they can actually know who these people are and sue them. I know one case similar to this that happened at Cheap Ass Gamer where one of the big things that happens on Cheap Ass Gamers, people get glimpses of the weekly ads early. And there's one person that was particularly noteworthy for that. And Circuit City, in like the final few years of their existence, decided they wanted his name, personal information, all that, so they can sue him for this. And GPD, who runs that site, fought the entire way, calling bullshit on the claims that they should be able to do this. And eventually won.
Yeah.
Fought back Circuit City. I think there's potentially similar things going to happen here.
Well, I think the other thing that's going to happen here is really going to kind of be something to really watch out for is the personal information, that sort of reveal. If Valve gives that up, then they can get sued.
Yeah.
Like, especially for this kind of case.
For this kind of thing, yeah.
These chuckleheads.
Yeah, if I think if you were talking about and the other problem with this too is that there was actually a ruling, I want to say it was probably about 6 months ago, I ended up reading about it in the New York Times, where somebody slapped down a lot of these RIAA lawyers because the judge came out and said an IP address is not a person. So that precedent is something that could be brought into this as well. Because if, let's say, Valve did give it up and the names of these people happened, they could very well just go, that wasn't me. yeah, it was on my computer or whatever, but that wasn't me. It's that, frankly, it's the same way people get out of traffic camera stuff, because if they don't actually get a clear picture, like this has happened a lot here where I live. If the traffic cameras that they've stuck on every single light now to bust people, if it doesn't actually get a picture of your face, then you can plausibly deny that you were driving. Yes, that is my car. Yes, that is my license plate. But four people in my house have access to my car. Just because you have my plate doesn't mean it was me. And so it kind of applies the same way here with the IP addresses. And there was a judge that ruled in favor of somebody that was getting sued by the RIAA. They actually went to court with them. And the judge said an IP address is not proof enough that this person did it. So I think you could take that and turn it on its head, where Valve gave them that information based on accounts. That you can very well come back and say, just, you know, again, SizzleCrotch69 on Steam may or may not be John Doe. We don't really know that. So, you know, that's something else. And then they could get sued for revealing that personal information. You know, anytime mm-hmm. you're dealing with credit cards and things like that, giving that stuff away, giving that info away, that's a big deal.
There's also the possible fact that this might not even go to trial. It could be that Digital Homicide basically just pursues, you know, what I like to call legal vampirism, where they basically just bleed Valve dry financially until finally Valve just gives up.
The thing is, you have to have money to do that.
Yeah.
That's where the self-representation comes in.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the reason that they're trying to claim what they can claim, because then they can go, yeah, I'm representing myself, and therefore I should be paid for it. I mean, the thing is, this type of legal stuff gets tricky anyway. I don't know if you guys ever followed the shooter case from the Aurora massacre in Colorado a couple of years ago. The people over there, the plaintiffs for the deceased and the disabled, sued the movie theater chain, and they lost because they said, you know, the movie theater should have provided a certain level of protection, and they did not, and they lost. And now the movie, this is really, really kind of like awful. But the movie theater chain is asking those people to pay like $700,000 in legal fees. So this is one of those things that can back, you know, backfire on somebody. And that sounds like that's part of the reason why these guys are going to self-represent themselves, because then they're technically really not putting up any money. You know, they're just putting up their time, and then they can go back if they are able to win and go, my time was worth this, you know. So.
Yeah, and then the fact that Valve also cut off their developer account, yeah, okay, it basically puts them out of business as far as,
yeah,
you know, as far as Steam goes.
And that's what's scary about that kind of thing. Like,
But here's the thing.
It's Valve's service.
It's Valve's service, for one, and two, there is so much of this crap on Steam.
Yeah.
That Valve really does have to set a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but at the same time, do they really? Because, yes, it is Valve's service, but at the same time, it's also become the de facto delivery form for PC games.
Yeah, like, does that matter?
Yes, it absolutely does, because if you're looking at it in terms of the actual available marketplace, Valve is in a position where they've really essentially choked out the rest of the market.
At that point, you know, you have you can feasibly look at an antitrust claim.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. Somebody could say, because while you are looking at it and going, yes, you know, it is, they are a private company and this and that, the fact of the matter does remain is that
they're basically a monopoly.
They are the PC games industry when you're talking about digital delivery. Yes, you have a couple of alternatives, but it would be like, essentially, Valve is the Walmart rolling into town when previously there were a whole bunch of little mom and pop stores, you know, and you could take that one step further, because it's not like somebody can go get retail space and then open up something that will compete with Steam. They don't have that ability. They're not going to have that ability. So, yeah, you could look at antitrust because, like Phil said, they're basically cutting off their way of living, essentially. So, I mean, there's a lot of ins and outs to this. Obviously, we are not lawyers. But I could see, you know, this Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things you could just get nasty, because I don't think Valve will give those people's information over. I think if they did that, it'd be stupid. I think they would be opening themselves up to something that they don't want to deal with. But at the same time, I'm also really sitting here and going, okay, you know, if this is the route that they're taking, you know, I do think, and I've felt this way for a while, you know, Valve controlling stuff the way that they do, and we've talked about this when it comes to digital distribution, digital rights, and things like that. You know, if I get fucked over, like the big reason the Steam refund policy was such a big deal was because eventually Valve would have gotten sued by someone. If, like, take these guys' games, for example, and we can actually tie this in with the whole thing that happened with No Man's Sky a while back. A bunch of people have been able to get refunds on No Man's Sky when they've hit like 50 hours because there's something fundamentally wrong with the game's code that causes it to start crashing when you've dealt or when you've been into a set amount of time in the game and you've achieved a certain map completion. And it happened on the console games as well. There was actually a guy on NeoGAF who got a refund. He bought it digitally and he had played it 55 times. Or 55 hours, and he had taken screenshots of all the times that the game had crashed. And so that was one of the reasons people were able to get their refunds back on Steam. A big part of the reason that I believe that Valve put this kind of thing is because eventually they'd have gotten sued. Because if you're a consumer, the only way you have to control this kind of thing to work in your favor, if you get something that's broken and then the person that you bought this from, the company you bought this from, is not willing to help you with it, your only recourse at that point is a chargeback. But in an all-digital system, if you pursue a chargeback with your bank, typically you are cut off from the service that you're charging back. So, like, if I bought a game, like, let's say I bought Fallout tomorrow. If I bought Fallout tomorrow, Fallout 4 on Steam, and I said, you know what, this isn't for me, and Steam... Or say, let's actually make it to a game that we know that doesn't work on a fundamental level, really at its core. Let's say Fallout New Vegas. That game had so many glitches, it was unbelievable. So let's say I've played 3-4 hours, and I get to a point where no matter what I do, I can't progress because there's some glitch in the game, and the game got knowingly released with this glitchy shit in it. I have no recourse. I just dropped $50 on something that I can't even fucking play anymore. My only recourse is a chargeback. But if you do a chargeback in these systems, if you do one to Sony, if you do one to Microsoft or anything else like that, they literally just shut your account down. So that's one of the reasons that Valve did this whole refund thing. And I also have to believe it's because of developers like this who put out shit games and people are like, man, I can't believe I fucking paid for them. Give me my $10 or $12 back or whatever. I don't care if you got .ninja in your domain name. Fuck you. You know. So that's part of the reason they have this stuff in there. And this is one of those things that's going to have to be dealt with when you have these corporations controlling the in and the out, for not only for people making these games, but for people being able to buy them, and then also having any sort of consumer protection if that game is fundamentally broken. So, you know, this is one of those things where, yeah, you can look at it and just go, well, these guys are trolling, but there could be a lot of stuff that could come out of this that, you know, I think could affect Valve depending on how they want to pursue it, because I think the antitrust thing will eventually come up in the same way that it came up with Microsoft, you know, where Windows became the de facto operating system, and they got sued by everybody because they were loading software on it and felt like they were, you know, crowding everybody else out. If Valve gets to pick and choose who makes games in their ecosystem, and because it is so ubiquitous, that could be something they could eventually get sued on. That's the thing I think these guys might have legs on. Other than that, I don't know.
Yeah, their official site, digitalhomicide.ninja, they have taken over a large part of it and say they're actually seeking legal representation to put in some sort of suit against Valve itself.
Yeah.
For some of the things you mentioned, like things like taking away their potential to make income for their families. So we'll see how that actually goes, because they're soliciting legal representation through a website saying, hey, email our support email. That's the best way to get good like good representation, I think.
Everybody's got a GoFundMe.
Yeah. I don't think they're actually asking for money, just no, interested for
somebody to,
lawyers to talk to us.
Yeah. I'm not sure who would want
especially
to
after
touch this
everything
with a 10-foot
they've done
pole.
For the past yeah. couple years.
Yeah.
I think there's also an important part of it is they spent 21 months being harassed, like, and dealing with it, and supposedly can't make new games because they have to do this lawsuit.
Yeah, nobody's on, like, forcing them to do this lawsuit. They could just not do it and, you know, make games. But
try and improve and make stuff that people are actually going to like. Or just
right, but isn't the question if they continue to make games if they don't have the ability to actually put the games out, then why are they even going to focus on doing that?
Well, that's the thing. They lost the ability to put those games out by pursuing this.
Mm-hmm. But doesn't that also then go back to like kind of the similar situation that I was talking about, where if you're questioning Valve for their motives and whatever you're doing in order to actually, you know, whatever the case may be, you're basically taking an action against them, and they are then turning around and basically taking their ball and going home. And in this case, the ball happens to be the PC market.
Yeah. Still.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's like there's no clear cut right or wrong here. That's the weird thing about this. These two guys, okay, I might not particularly like what they do personally, but legally they kind of do have something. And whether they can actually make it stick, and that's the big thing. If they do make it stick, that kind of opens the door for pretty much every shovelware developer to go this same route. And yeah, that's not
good. That's not somewhere we want to go.
Well, it'll be interesting because you could look at it from the lens of time. I mean, remember what happened with Tengen and Nintendo?
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, Nintendo basically controlled, you know, the means of production and basically said you're going to go through us in order to get this kind of thing done. You're going to have to go through us. You're going to have to buy your cartridges. You're going to have to do all this. And they were like, fuck you. And, you know, did they win? No, they didn't win because they were hacking Nintendo's chips to make that stuff happen. I think that was how they lost.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just the means of production, but I think that's what caused them to lose. I actually have to look that up again now that we're talking about it. I'm curious about it.
Yeah, if Tengen had won, their games wouldn't be Rare.
Yeah, it was a really fascinating story on how Tengen even got those games to work.
Because they were essentially, from what I understand, they reverse engineered some of Nintendo's proprietary chip. That basically gave the handoff to the family or to the NES that said that this game was legitimate, and that was how they lost.
Yeah,
but this is a little different than like putting something in a CD drive or having it digitally delivered by a company. So
yeah, this would be more like if Digital Homicide figured out a way to get their games on Steam without Valve.
Without Valve, yeah, that would be much more similar to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right now, they sell stuff through itch.io and Amazon.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, looking over their wiki page, it mentions that they have used pseudonyms for their company's name over the years to cover up their previous works.
Yep.
Also, Jim Sterling accused them of deleting negative feedback on the game from their review pages on Steam, as well as banning users.
Can they do that?
From their forms.
Yeah, they can.
Okay.
Yeah.
I imagine it's for BS stuff, like people just spamming their reviews and such, but generally not supposed to be used to remove criticism.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that some of these smaller developers that feel that they're being harassed will do is they'll go after these personalities on YouTube. You know, it's not the first time it happens. It probably won't be the last.
Well, and that leads to an even bigger discussion of, like, you're not immune to criticism. I mean, like, my wife and I were at dinner last night. We went out to eat at an Italian restaurant that we really like. And we started talking about Yelp reviews. Like, this Italian restaurant isn't like some five-star fancy place, but the food is fucking great. We enjoy the atmosphere. It's actually – it's the complete opposite of something like an Olive Garden where it feels like you're in a cattle call that has fucking tables, you know. It's quiet. It's lit well, but it's lit intimately, you know. And they make – they really kind of make simple food. They're not doing like some fucking Italian-Asian fusion or whatever the fuck the new thing is that everybody's into. They just make good, simple food that tastes good, and the atmosphere in the place is nice. And so we started talking about reviews, and she said she read a review. It wasn't for this restaurant, but she was on Yelp reading reviews, and she came across one for a restaurant that we had gone to, and the complaint by the person that wrote the review was that the Wi-Fi – so they said specifically the food was 5 stars, but the Wi-Fi speed was shit. And so then, therefore, they gave them a 2-star rating. And so then that led us to a conversation of, like, why do you give a fuck about the Wi-Fi in a restaurant? You're going there with somebody or whatever. You're going there to eat. Like, I would care if the food was terrible and the Wi-Fi was great. That would actually be something that I would write up. Like, they're obviously paying more attention to their router than their recipes, you know. But, like, you would sit there and go, oh, like, why is this something that's a concern? And, like, even though that guy was a complete asshole for posting up something that was completely tangential to what you would actually review a restaurant for, I don't see anything wrong with him actually, you know, expressing that kind of opinion. It just shows that he's a dumbass. So, like, this the whole idea of being able to delete negative reviews or go after people like Jim Sterling. Now, I think Jim Sterling can be kind of acerbic. That's probably the best way to describe it. But – And really kind of, I think, hyperbolic and over the top, but he has that right to be. And if you put works out for people, or if you put a workout for people to consume, you can't get mad that people are going to shit on it. And I deal with the public every single day. People are idiots. That's just how it works. And sometimes people are going to say stupid shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you can't hold that against them. You certainly can't try to sue them for that.
Right. Yeah. All right, we need to move on because we could spend the whole day on this subject.
Yeah, but I think we got a good discussion out of this.
Yeah, we need to get out before we get sued.
Yeah, you don't sue us. Speaking of being sued, Sega kind of indirectly went after Nintendo.
Oh yes,
for their lovely cease and desist policy. Cease and desist policy, was it more of a policy or more of a
weapon
of mass destruction?
Basically, their
it was a C&D bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a story we've been following for a while. They've basically been throwing C&D orders at pretty much anything fan-developed based on Nintendo IPs, except Project M for whatever reason. They don't want to touch that. But there was a Sonic project on that was posted up on YouTube called Green Hill Paradise Act 2. And Sega themselves, through their official Sonic account, made a response that said, "Be right back, DMCA time. Just kidding, keep up the good work."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is how to do it right, really. Basically, Sega is taking the approach of looking at fan games the same way they would look at any other piece of fan art, which, that's probably the best way to go about it, I think.
Yeah. Plus, let's not forget, like, Sonic Mania itself.
Yep.
It has a fan dev team behind it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's where it has its roots.
Or at least partially.
And it looks to be one of the best Sonic games ever made already.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, Sega, it's in their best interests to, like, not put the kibosh on this kind of thing. Because,
pretty much every Sonic game in the last 10 years has been shit.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems to be the key component here, is that, yes, it's... We've talked time and time again how we think Nintendo is really kind of wrong for how they've gone after the people that they've gone after, but at the same time... Sega hasn't really put out very many good games in 10 years. So
yeah, and
Nintendo has.
That's one of the things that I did want to mention, is that, you know, Sega is a company that is struggling to rebuild themselves.
Mm-hmm.
you know, they have a lot of IP that they can you know draw from, and they may very well you know go to the well for that sooner or later.
That being said, as far as the rebuilding goes, they're doing a great job.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean it's two different very very different strategies that Nintendo and Sega is are pursuing. Nintendo seems to be content to just piss away all of the goodwill that they would have had, yeah. Whereas Sega is trying to foster that.
Yeah,
and the way Sega went about it was not really. It wasn't belligerent. It wasn't like they were just
opening
fire
Nintendo.
On Nintendo. They were. It was almost like a friend pulling one of their friends aside and going, "Hey, man, maybe you've had a few too many to drink, but you're being a real asshole right now. So why are you acting this way?" And that's how Sega is acting toward Nintendo. They're just kind of saying, "What's going on?" And at the same time, being a really good example as far as what Nintendo should be doing as well.
Yeah, and this is this is what Sega needs to do. They're struggling to be relevant. They're struggling to rebuild themselves. They absolutely need to foster their community.
Yep.
And you don't do that by sending cease and desist letters.
Nope.
Yeah, though. We know recently, in the past few years, Sega was themselves sending lots of rage strikes to various YouTubers, doing videos on Shining Force and various other things.
Yeah,
and notice that version of Sega doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, for now, we'll see.
Well, Sammy no longer owns them.
So. Yeah, it is a completely separate entity now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I kind of like how this Sega is progressing. They're still a work in progress, but the signs are positive so far.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep it going.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about some delays. South Park, The Fractured Butthole, slips to 2017.
Yep.
Yeah, no date. Just early next year.
Yeah, just early next year. Probably February, I would imagine. Maybe March.
No, more in February. It's too many games.
No, too many. Yeah, we got a lot of crap in February.
It'll happen.
Kind of unfortunate.
They got scared by the next game we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Don't see any common thread between those, but...
No.
It was going to come out on the same day as South Park.
Yeah.
And also I'm joking, mostly.
Hmm. Well, there actually might be something to that. Because... Last Guardian was one of those games that's so highly anticipated, it kind of sucks the air out of the room. So,
yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of have to ask Brandon to apologize for delaying The Last Guardian. Because he put in a pre-order.
I'm not going to apologize.
Yeah, he pre-ordered and then immediately got delayed.
So. It's the second time we've had that.
Correlation does not mean causation, but that's okay.
Except in this case.
I regret that.
If we do see any patterns, we'll start to wonder.
Yeah.
No, I just got this weird delay competition between Last Guardian and Final Fantasy XV.
Yeah.
Who can get released last?
Well, at least as far as Final Fantasy XV is concerned, that...
For all the right reasons.
Yeah, that December... That November, late November release date seems to be pretty solid.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
I mean, the game is pretty. They basically have said the game is done. It's just. Yeah.
They just got up.
They're just integrating what would have been the initial patch into the disc.
I actually think that's great. Shit on Square. I think the fact that they're actually making a move that makes a lot of sense because. You know, they're also taking their audience into consideration. You know, there are people that don't have that kind of internet out in Japan. They're, you know, or even here in America, right? But not just that. Just saying, hey, if you want to play this in 15 years and the servers are gone that are going to have this day one patch, we're still going to make sure this is on the disc so you can play it the way we intended. And you know what? All other criticism aside, because I still think they're run by a very strange group of people, that is something that should be applauded.
It's basically Tabata telling...
sounds exactly like what I was saying a couple weeks ago about the same thing.
Basically, Tabata telling them, look, you people are making me if you guys are the ones who are making me polish a turd here, I'm going to make sure it's the most polished turd I can possibly.
Yeah, I think it's just
and if convenient. It turns out to still be shit, it's not going to be my fault.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's just convenient spin for them because they were ready to release it in that state.
Yeah.
Realized it was going to be not anywhere good to do that, so they pushed it and then said, hey, well, conveniently we can put this on the disc.
Yeah. I think it's definitely, I think there's a mix there. But again, I still think they deserve credit for it. Like, they could have just said, look, we're going to delay it, and they were still going to slap the day one out there, you know, on the on the.
No, surf. You're saying they exactly what I was saying a month ago on this show.
Yeah.
When the announcement came in, it's about non-connected players, and it's about long-term future players. Mm-hmm. And when you've got a franchise like Final Fantasy, you want players to have that ability to put the game disc in the fucking machine and have it work the way it's supposed to, mm-hmm. even if there is no server to distribute what was a patch to make it work.
Yeah.
And I think when we get to that point, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, we're going to be astounded when we look back at 7th and 8th generations and see how many games become utter shit in hindsight because we can't access the patches that actually made them playable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So The Last Guardian, still coming out this year, but late this year.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on that.
You think it'll have a day one patch?
It better not. But at this point, you never know.
I think it's inevitable. It's holding on to a 2016 release for dear life, even though it's moved to December.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we should note that this is the beginning of our TGS coverage. Everything that we talk about from here on will be pertaining to TGS news that has come out.
Yep.
Yeah, Last Guardian moving to a December launch. I'm not sure if there's an exact date on it.
December 6th.
Yep. So early December, at least.
Yeah, just in time for the holidays.
It'll make the holidays, so that'll be nice.
Yeah. I think it might have been better off going to January, so it could have more space to itself, more breathing room to December not have to worry about all of the holiday stuff going on.
Then. Elbow room.
Yeah. Especially since we know that February is going to be completely crowded. January might be a little bit more open.
Yeah.
For now.
Since we got Neo, that has
February
to February 2017.
Neo, by the way, game that was originally not on my radar, but it kind of is now.
See, it hit my radar hard when it was first unveiled at, get this, E3 2005.
Yep. Yeah, with the unveiling of the PS3.
Yep.
Yeah, when all you had was a screen of a bunch of people marching and that was it.
And for the longest time, I had just operated on the assumption that the development had gone on as planned and it had released sometime maybe 2007, 2008 for the PS3 in Japan and just never made its way over here. I didn't realize that it was languishing in development hell the entire time.
And they gave it to Team Ninja.
But it's coming together. It looks great. And it's on track for February.
Yeah.
In all fact, this game is actually inspired by a old script that Akira Kurosawa wrote.
And his son was going to direct, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a pretty hefty pedigree.
That doesn't hurt it at all.
No. But unfortunately, you know, as far as games are concerned, Kurosawa's work has not been respected in that medium. I mean,
yeah, here's February.
His son was the same one who gave us Seven Samurai 20XX.
Yeah,
and if anybody remembers that one, you have my sympathies.
Do you guys want to hear about what's coming out in February next year?
Yeah, let's go over what's showing up in February.
Okay, on the 3rd is Yoshi's Woolly World for the 3DS. The 9th, Neo for the PS4. For the 14th, For Honor, Persona 5, Sniper Elite 4.
Ooh, that's a stack day.
21st, Berserk and the Band of the Hawk, and Halo Wars 2. 23rd, Nier Automata, and 28th, Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah,
I dodged a few bullets there, but it's still going to be a busy month.
The thing that sucks about this is that I almost feel like the industry really needs to take a look at the way that the movie industry does things as far as releases. Like, nobody releases a movie up against, like, the next Avengers. They wait a week, mm-hmm. you know? Like, I kind of have been sitting here thinking, like, with some of these releases, especially, what's interesting is now we're seeing a move way past the holiday season, right? Like, before it was like everything is in November. And now it's like everything is from October now through February. Like, but we still go through dry months. Like, yeah. I don't, and I understand it's a little bit different than the movie industry, but part of me also is sitting here going, like, maybe you guys should take a step back.
That's mostly like June and July now these days.
Yeah.
January, February, March, April, May are generally pretty packed. And there's also all the digital stuff.
Yeah.
So that fills it in even more, and it's like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know.
Well, and then that, but see, that also then speeds up the whole problem of like that a lot of these developers scream about when it comes to their games being devalued. Well, there's only, especially with these people putting out these games that take dozens to hundreds of hours to complete, there's only so much that people can actually play. And so at some point, what they can actually play is what's going to, the thing that's going to get their dollars. And that's why you see so many of these titles drop in price after the fact, is because if you have a choice between three 80-hour games, you're not going to play all of them that month. It's not going to happen. And so because it's not going to happen, you're making a decision about which you're going to play. And then that tends to devalue the next one, because if, let's say, it takes, you know, for the crazy players, it takes you a month to play an 80-hour game. That means at that point, you're not going to be able to play something else, at least until the next month. And by then, that thing's going to go on sale. So then you buy that one, and then there's that third game that's, so you may not get to this other, these all of these games that have come out for 3, 4, 5 months. And by then, because they're not moving on the retail shelves, the retailers are like, okay, we got to drop the price on this to actually get these things moved. And then you just end up kind of in the same cycle over and over, because you're like, well, what's the point? You know, I know that's kind of the point that I've gotten to, because it's like, I can only play so much. I only have so much time. And so where's the money going to come in? You know?
Yeah, that's just kind of an inevitable thing at this point, because we have so many platforms, so many developers, so many publishers, so many games. It's impossible for any one person to play them all, much less for any one platform's worth of people to really get to everything they want.
Well, and that's why it always has frustrated me that the industry's response has been to blame us.
Well, yeah, because we're there and we're going to take it.
That's, we only have so much money.
Down to. Yeah.
Meanwhile, when we get the new firmware for the PS4, I created a funny screenshot by just putting everything in a folder called Backlog.
Everything.
That's the reality of the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. So
it's nice and convenient that I have that place you can go, here's everything that I could play next.
Oh, okay.
Crap. Yeah, but it's everything.
Yeah. So moving on, Death Stranding. We saw at E3 a little bit of a teaser for that.
It made no freaking sense, but
no,
we didn't really care, because...
But because it's Hideo Kojima, and it's not supposed to make sense.
Yeah.
He's giving people ropes, not sticks.
I was almost getting, like, thoughts of the late Satoshi Kon when I saw that trailer.
Yeah.
Very... It feels like it's going to have that kind of vibe going on.
Yeah. Well, it'll be an open world game, that much we know.
Open world action game is what how he described it.
Yeah. And it should be out before the 2020 Olympics.
Let's see.
We know.
4, 1, 2, 3,
next 4 years.
4 years, yeah. Okay, that's a pretty safe announcement, I would say, because if it's going to take you 4 years to develop it, it's
well, don't forget where the 2020 Olympics are going to be located.
Yeah, Japan, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's kind of a big deal for them.
Yeah,
but I'm not entirely sure how relevant that announcement is. Whatever.
Well, do you remember? You watched Akira, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Remember what was happening before it all, before everything goes to shit?
Mm.
The Olympics were coming to Tokyo.
Good point.
I think he's trying to...
Yeah, I completely missed that reference. Thank you, Brandon, for making me feel like an idiot.
I think what Kojima is trying to warn us, I think he's making one of his famously obscure movie references there.
Yeah. Yeah, it went right over my head. But, yeah. Kojima also completely is disowning Metal Gear Survive, something he should do.
He was asked about rumors that it was his idea. And he said, and I quote, "That's not the case. I have absolutely nothing to do with or know anything of it. For me, Metal Gear Solid is espionage, it's political fiction, and something like zombies wouldn't appear in that world."
Yeah.
So. Vampires and ghost missiles,
wood. Vampires, yeah, everything else like that.
Giant flaming humpback whale.
And not to mention a guy that can also detect what's in your memory card slot. But yeah, zombies are fucking far-fetched.
Yeah, well, we all have to have a line, you know. Yeah. There's got to be a line that we will not cross.
God damn it.
I mean, zombies are boring compared to what you have in Metal Gear.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's saying is, I wouldn't even stoop to that point.
Yeah. See, I would prefer he came out and said that. Like, zombies? What are you, fucking amateur?
What do you think we are, Call of Duty?
Yeah. Closest thing we've had to zombies.
That's just one translation of what he said.
Yeah. The closest thing we've had to zombies in a Metal Gear game wasn't actually in the actual game proper. It was in that dream sequence in Snake Eater.
Hmm. Yeah.
Where you suddenly are playing this dude with hook swords and... you have to go back and look at it.
Yeah.
It's just another reason not to trust any Metal Gear rumors that come out.
Yeah.
Ever.
Just start there, and then if it comes true, then okay.
Yeah. So we got some Street Fighter V news.
Yep.
Patch coming out on Thursday.
Yep.
Along with Urien.
Yep. Urien.
Still no arcade mode.
Yeah.
And we will keep reminding you. And I swear I will keep reminding you that until they finally put a freaking arcade mode into the game that should have already had an arcade mode to begin with.
Mm. Not that we're bitter.
Oh, no, we're not bitter. We're not bitter at all. We're just extremely pissed off.
Yeah. But that patch will basically be doing some rebalancing. It'll bring Urien in. And it will also round out the first season.
Have versus CPU mode, so that's something.
Yeah, that's a thing, I guess. Yeah.
It's not the same.
Yeah. Meanwhile, KOS has all of that.
I'm just going to come right out with it and say, if anyone is expecting like a single player ladder that leads to individual character endings, I don't think they're ever going to get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just think, full stop, that's not on the table.
Yep. Yeah. Alien.
I think that ship has sailed. I mean, I think they're just,
you know, whatever happens next, whether it's Rival Schools 3 or... You know, there's talk that Disney having a new take on licensing will lead to Marvel vs. Capcom 4. Yeah. You know, we'll see what they do with that. But Street Fighter V, we're at a place right now, it seems like it just is what it is.
Yeah, it kind of is what it is. If you're into the competitive side of it, you're very well served. If you're not, then you're not.
Nope.
And that's not the audience that Street Fighter V is going for.
I wouldn't even say competitive, because Street Fighter V is still very, very enjoyable if you're playing just casual matches in a room of four or five people.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like this is a game exclusively for the Evo bound. So, they're just back and trying to nudge everyone toward that experience of playing it together.
And that's the disappointing part about it is that they could have gotten that done very, very well. And they could have handled, if they had just been able to handle everything a little bit better, if they didn't have that, you know, kind of that calendar running against them, none of us would have the complaints that we're having. People would be, I think Street Fighter would have had a bit more of a resurgence than it has now. But I think they really shot themselves in the foot as far as the longevity of this game and as far as the plans that they had for the game outside of the tournament circle. Because, you know, at when
they
it was
have
released,
plans for this game outside of the tournaments.
Well, no. Don't you remember all the stuff they were talking about wanting this to be like a truly social experience and getting people hooked in and doing it like that?
That's kind of been the rhetoric since Street Fighter IV launched.
Right.
Yeah, and no follow through.
This was their first time they were going to be able to do it. Yeah, all the crap with the fight money and all that other nonsense. Like, they were trying to pursue a partial free-to-play model with a $60 box that was incomplete. And that really fucked them. Yeah. And, you know, I think this is one of those things that Street Fighter V will probably never recover from. In the same way that Microsoft's blunder with the Xbox One over and over and over again, and then finally they have that one holiday where they're able to break away, and not only are the third-party games that are put out that year completely fucked up from a technical standpoint, they had Master Chief Collection broken for like 6 months. And that was the final nail in the coffin for them this generation. And that's why I think they lost that goodwill that they had. I think Capcom has lost the goodwill that they would have had from people that would have been willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, because they wanted money for an incomplete product. They wanted full price for an incomplete product.
Yeah. And then there was that disaster of a story mode that they released a couple of months ago, which... Yeah.
Well, and you know, it's funny. This portion of it kind of reminds me of Nintendo's problem is that Capcom has always been able to skate around the fact that their story mode and everything else like that has not been very good. They've never – anything that they've added, with the exception of like what they did in Alpha 3, was never that big of a deal, because you could have Mortal Kombat and those other games putting out – or they were put out at the time. And yeah, they had more options and things like that, but they were not nearly as playable. I don't think that's really the case now with a lot of the stuff that's put out. So a lot of the expectations that besides the tournament player, besides the expectations that they have, the general public has a much different set of expectations about what they want out of a fighting game as far as modes compared to what I think Capcom is used to. And I think that's the other thing that really did not work in their favor this time around, because people want more. And you can say whatever you want about the way that Mortal Kombat plays. The extra modes that they put in those games are fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
that becomes the yardstick, essentially.
Yeah.
Although I won't have anything negative to say about the way Mortal Kombat plays now. Back in the day, I was the giant Mortal Kombat hater, but... what Ed Boon has done with the franchise since getting away from Midway has been amazing.
Yeah. It was a little bit of a rough start with MK9. The game was a little on the chunky side. But 10
Well, not compared to his past work.
Well, yeah. But still,
it was third strike compared to his past work.
Yeah. But with 10, they really nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't want to turn this into let's shit on Street Fighter V, but yeah, that's kind of what happened. Anyways, moving on to King of Fighters 14 and a rather good SNK interview that happened over at TGS.
I don't think there's been a bad SNK interview since the company sort of got resurrected. They're always entertaining. But main bullet point right now is the main focus they've got is on a big balancing patch coming to KOF 14 next month. They don't want to make major sweeping changes to it, but they admitted that certain mechanics that are in the game were a little quote-unquote too fun.
Yeah, like, Nakaruru's always out projectile.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That can nom on other projectiles.
Yeah.
They pretty much straight up admitted that is going away. It's not going to be a thing. But other than that, they don't really want to change a whole lot. They wanted the game to be fun by way of everything being powerful, and I think they did a good job of that.
I really do.
However, the whole theory about them moving on from KOF 14 to maybe Garo 2 or a Samurai Showdown reboot may be a little bit premature, because they're still somewhat understaffed, and the creative climate at SNK right now doesn't really favor any particular IPs. It's like you can, with the people they've got there right now, you can find somebody evangelizing almost any given franchise to upper management. And so we have no idea what IP is going to get worked on next. Samurai Showdown still has a little tiny bit of an edge because of a Sony poll in Japan that that asked fans what they would want to see next from SNK. But that really guarantees nothing as far as what they're actually going to decide upon. So we'll see how this plays out. And the only thing we know for sure right now is that SNK, everyone on board there is just super eager to get working on whatever comes next.
Yeah.
And that is great.
Mm-hmm.
Also rhinoceros beetles.
Yeah,
rhino bugs.
Neo G apparently had a few as pets that overbred. And so everyone on staff at SNK was practically issued theirs. And the office is now full of them. And apparently he's got another generation of them on the way. So, yeah.
So stay tuned next year for SNK's latest IP, Rhino Beetles the Game.
Yeah, Metal Slug.
As long as the domain name is rhinobeetlesthegame.ninja, I'll be there.
And in that note, stay tuned next year for Smashpad's newest domain name, smashpad.sexymckickass.
You never know. Yeah. So, but we know for a fact that the SNK will be doing another game at some point, because they can't, just stick with KOF.
They're not going to leave with KOF.
Yeah. It's just a matter of when and what.
Yep.
Yeah. So let's be patient for now. We're in a good place with KOF 14. It's a great game.
It came together fast.
Yeah. A lot of hard work went into it in basically all departments, because it was just a spectacular release. And if you were burned by Street Fighter V, as we've said before, this is the game you want to get, because
I really wish Atlus and SNK were doing a better job of driving that point home.
Yeah, but I think maybe they have a bit too much class to do that.
Well, I don't think you have to be belligerent about it. You don't have to call Capcom out on the carpet, if you will.
They at least, they don't have to, because, maybe they have enough class, but if they did, it would basically be a case of them calling it even.
Yeah,
because let's not forget,
all they need to do is just get the word out that, put all of the marketing behind getting the message out that for anyone who feels like, a little bit let down by fighting games recently, there's this game just heaping with content that's out there now, ready to be, experienced. And you don't have to get mean to get that point across.
No.
And the audience is absolutely out there. It's never been more out there.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're missing an opportunity. I do.
Well, we'll wait and see there. And also in the fighting game space, Evo Japan announced.
Yes.
January 2018 looks like will be the first.
That's what they're aiming for. It's nice to see a big global scale
expansion
fighting game event happen in Japan, since we don't really have Super Battle Opera anymore. So this is a huge announcement, and it fills a major void in the community, in the tournament scene. So it's a natural progression, but one that's kind of overdue. And
are they going to stream it like an American
tournament
or like a Japanese tournament where there's text flying across the stream?
I'm sure there will be multiple streams. Evo is always such a big deal that
I was watching the Sony press conference, and they showed some Japanese stream thing.
Yep.
It's like there's text covering 90% of the screen. It's just flying across it. Like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. And about 80% of it is the letter W.
Yeah, for no apparent reason.
Well, no, that's what the Japanese use in place of LOL.
Oh.
It's shorthand for Wadaru, okay. Which literally means laughter, so. And then people will just spam it all over the
screen. More you know.
Mm. Yeah. So what else do we know about EVO Japan?
Very interesting list of partners involved. The one that initially jumped out at me is VFR. And part of the reason for that is we recently heard about that Virtua Fighter IP or trademark renewal.
Yeah, the domain name got renewed, so yeah.
Virtua Fighter 5 Final Showdown got added to Xbox One backward compatibility this week. And now we know that it's coming to the PS4 as a bonus on Yakuza 6. Hmm. Virtua Fighter is showing signs of life again, and Sega's getting ready to do something. No idea what, but I'm pretty sure that we'll know before EVO Japan.
Yeah, it gives them a good bit of time to actually get a game out right before that show.
Yep.
Yeah, show, tournament.
It just looks like everything is lined up perfectly.
Hmm.
If they can get something announced shortly after the start of the year, and then maybe have it hit arcades toward the fall, have EVO Japan run, maybe not coincidentally, but near possibly a new Beat Tribe Cup.
Yeah, there could be a lot of potential there.
Yeah, there's movement.
Yeah.
Other news that came out of it, and this was all announced on stage by Joey KR and Mark Julio.
Yeah.
Who have long been involved in the fighting game community and would actually be really good guests on the show. They've also announced a new parent company called Triple Perfect that will be handling EVO as a whole moving forward.
So now we basically know what Mark Julio is going to be up to for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And he said he was going to be busy even after he left.
Outcast, yeah. Just going full
he's
on.
Been,
on
he's been really involved in Tekken with Namco Bandai, and now there's this, so.
Yeah.
It's good news. Especially as just someone who has watched this entire thing evolve from, you know, alt.games.sf2 to Shoryuken to this, and it's just amazing seeing how the community's grown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't heard the last of it either. Oh. So, you know, January 2017, it looks like we're going to get more details, more news. I expect some very interesting things to come out of this.
Yeah. Be excited, because this is... I think it's going to serve some very currently underserved corners of the community in terms of game selection, especially. Yeah.
Also, like, you know, keep in mind that EVO Japan will be a major being held over there, and that's just a good thing for Japanese players in general.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not like there aren't majors in Japan, but they don't happen at the scale of an EVO anymore, and it looks like this is a major move to fix that.
Yeah.
And it's the defining move to fix that.
Yeah. Now we'll also have to wait and see if there's an EVO Europe that shows up.
I would still like to see a Super Battle Opera return, but my head knows better.
Yeah.
My heart wants it, but my head knows better. So.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. Coming from that, a couple of our last stories here. We'll try to get through these because we've been running long.
Yeah.
Saga Scarlet Grace gets a gameplay trailer along with a half hour of gameplay that you can watch.
Yeah. And included that in the show notes because we're cool like that.
Yeah. And watch it because it looks really cool. And I think, 26.
We talked about good
Japan
Square Enix
release.
And bad Square Enix. This is
good
Square Enix.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
want to see more of this and less of Deus Ex Mankind Divided. Mankind Divided. Yeah, that's what it's called, I think. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so there's that. Plus Yakuza 6. Yeah.
Getting some possible game of show hype.
Yeah, it's a lot of people very, very pleased with what they're seeing here.
Yeah, beat Takeshi throwing a baby in the air.
Yeah, I'm not sure that was a great thing to do, but okay.
I saw a gif of him throwing a baby to himself. Just tossing baby back and forth.
Yeah. So, yeah. That will come out next year, I believe. It's not a not a 2016 release.
I think it's a February release.
I was going to say, I know it's February or January. Come on now.
It's January.
I think. Yeah, January. Oh, January?
Yeah, alongside the Kingdom Hearts HD collection and
Wait a minute, there's another one?
Yeah,
2.8 Final Showdown Prologue.
Final Chapter Prologue.
So, wait a minute. I don't even know what the fuck that means.
Neither does anybody else.
And
who knows? Who's ever going to know what it means with Nomura?
It's the rest of the Kingdom Hearts games they haven't put in HD yet.
Yeah.
So it's not Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2. It's all the other bullshit.
No, they've already done those.
Okay. I'd actually like to have those on the PS4, actually.
The 3DS game, maybe a mobile game? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's too many out there to know.
Yeah. So. Yeah, get hype. We got, Yakuza 6 coming out in January. If you need something to tide you over until Shenmue, you could do a lot worse.
Yeah. And not much better, because this series... We talked on this episode already about Sega doing a masterful job of rebuilding the company.
Yeah.
A lot of what we've been seeing from it has come from the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise, but there's also this movement on the other side, too, that we're seeing... possible movement in Virtua Fighter, Yakuza 6, that there's this energy there that we haven't seen from Sega in a long time, and they're being very selective about what they want to lead with, but they aren't being complacent.
Yeah, well, they have to be very selective. I mean, when you're a small company now like you are, and you have limited resources, you really have to prioritize what you're going to do. And,
which is probably why we haven't heard a lot of noise about a Shenmue 1 and 2 remake, even though we know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because they're going to do it, there's no question. But they want to plan it carefully with Yu Suzuki's team.
Yeah.
And they're going to be taking baby steps toward it because it is Shenmue.
Yeah.
And
they don't want to fuck it up.
Once bitten. As well.
Yeah. So lots of good stuff this week.
Yes.
Crap, I'm exhausted. Yeah. So I guess...
Good TGS this year.
Good TGS. A lot of other good stuff. I want to play some more Bioshock. I'm going to play some more Zenith. Count how many more F-bombs get thrown my way.
Nice.
But apart from that, I think we got a show.
We do.
Yeah. So, with that, I am Filippo DiNolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm LeeLamb.Ninja.
We'll see you next week.
And it's true, I got a grappling hook.